One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You know what? The peace has been protected, baby. The peace has been protected for so long. And now I'm not in the business of being disrespected anymore. So if you come crazy, I'm going to come crazier. What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, co-hosted by my sweet baby girl, mommy's favorite, Miss Mango the Gooey Girl, who is the reason why I was not here for last week's episode. Sorry about that, and also not sorry about that, because mother duties called, and Mango was a little sicky, so I had to take her to the vet, and you know, that's a stressful time. Stressful time for anyone where your cat is mysteriously sick and you don't know what's wrong. And Mango has a heart condition. So it sort of makes a lot of what could be small bits of nothing scarier. So I was not in the headspace to film a podcast for you guys. So I'm sorry about that. And also, I'm not sorry about that. Just know that at the end of the day, nobody wants to be here on this mic more than I do. Nobody looks forward to this show as much as me. So just know that if I'm not here some week for any reason, I've definitely got a damn good reason for not being on the mic this week. This is a one-woman show. Nobody else working on this but me. So if I'm not up to shape, if I'm not having a good week, if I can't emotionally be with it enough to sit down on this couch and talk to you guys, then there just isn't a show. So if I'm not here, I'm either on vacation or having a mental breakdown. And I'll let you guess which one it is. So last week, Miss Girl, my Mango, was my priority, and she's doing okay now. All is well, all is fine. But yeah, stressful nonetheless. We've been to the vet four times in the last 10 days. So not fun, but here we are. We're keeping it moving. We're keeping it trucking. And you know what's been getting me through this period, this time? Fucking Vanderpump Rules. I have resisted Bravo for about as long as someone can resist Bravo. I have resisted getting into so many of their shows, and I caved. I did it. I think I'm just, the weather starts to get a little bit nicer. We get a little hint of spring, and I start to hear dun, 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 dun. In the back of my head, I start saying things like babes. What else have I been saying recently? Jet 2 holidays. The weather starts to get a little bit nicer, and suddenly I'm like, dominoes. Like, suddenly life just starts getting a little bit better, and I start having a reality TV itch. Okay, and obviously, Love Island UK isn't back yet. And I've heard they're running 10 days behind schedule in terms of prepping the villa, which sounds a little crazy boots to me. They're going to need to speed up the trajectory on that one, because I need my Love Island UK stat. Okay. I need it injected into my veins. So in the waiting period between now and when Love Island actually starts, I got into Vanderpump Rules. I also watched the entirety of season two of Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Dude, when reality TV is good, it's too fucking good. Secret Lives of Mormon Wives isn't like top tier reality TV. Vanderpump Rules is though. Vanderpump Rules is top tier reality TV. I'm like actually fucked up about the fact that I hadn't gotten into it before, but I just feel like Vanderpump Rules, the shooters for Vanderpump, you guys need to get better at pitching, because I feel like the people that encouraged me to watch Vanderpump in the past, like, they just didn't do a good job of selling it to me. You guys have got to be more passionate. Tell me that this is one of the greatest reality shows to have ever existed, and nobody has ever done it like that since. Like, if you said that to me, maybe I would have listened, but none of you did. And actually, you can say that because it's true. Because it is true. It's an awesome reality show. But like the same way that us Jersey Shore truthers, that us Love Island UK truthers, the way we talk about those shows is the way that you guys need to start talking about Vanderpump. And maybe I just haven't been talking to the right people. Maybe I'm going to say this and there's going to be people in the comments like, who the fuck have you been talking to? Because people do nothing but ride for Vanderpump. But to be honest with you, I didn't really even hear much about Vanderpump ever until the Scandoval thing. I remember when Vanderpump first started, but I had no idea what the show was about until I fucking started it, okay? I thought that it was just about Vanderpump as a family. I didn't realize it was about the employees at a restaurant, at one of Lisa Vanderpump's restaurants, and it was more about this cast of random fucking 20-somethings just constantly cheating on each other. Nobody told me that. I didn't know. I thought that this was just like a Lisa Vanderpump, like Real Housewives spinoff thing just on her family, and I was like, oh, okay, rich people, boring. Like, I didn't care. But if you told me that the level of drama in pettiness, in cheating, in nonsensical shenanigans that were happening, like, if you told me, I would have been so down with it, okay? Why do you think I love Jersey Shore? Why do you think I love Love Island UK? Because these people are fucking insane. Because these people are crazy, okay? The reason why I don't like The Bachelor is because it's too tame. It's a little crazy when you get the full group of people there. Granted, I haven't seen many seasons of The Bachelor or Bachelorette franchise, but the ones that I have seen, I had a hard time getting through because I thought it was a snooze fest. I thought it was so fucking boring. At the start, it's interesting because there's all these people, so there's more room for conflict. But as the cast dwindles down, it starts to take itself so seriously. And I'm like, dude, this is not entertaining. It's not entertaining. Okay. But with Jersey Shore, they were crazy. Every last one of them. But they were lovable. And also, I never wish to know any of them. They're all terrifying to me. Although one time I did wait in line at a liquor store when I was 15 to try to meet Mike the Situation and get him to sign a bottle of vodka with my cousin. We didn't end up waiting the entire time because he was late and I was already in line for like 3 hours. I needed to go to the football game to hang out with my friends. It was a Friday night. That's some lore. That's some thing that would only happen in 2011. I don't know why I was even allowed to be in the line with my cousin, who was over the age of 21, but I was 15 and I was fully going to be like, my cousin's going to buy this bottle of vodka so that I can meet Mike the Situation. Like, how was I not terrified? How was I not so scared? I would never do that now. Simply out of fear. I can buy vodka now. I'm 28 years old. Totally could do that. I don't want to meet Mike the Situation. That's scary. Who would willingly put themselves in that situation? Point being, though, is you have a cast of people who are insane, that have lovable moments, but are ultimately people that are terrifying that you would never wish to know in your real life. They behave in ways that are unexplainable to you. They behave in ways that are unsimilar to you in your current life, in anyone you have ever met. Like, this is the reason why I love Love Island UK too. Like, so many dating shows, I'm like, fuck, I'm in the fucking dating pool with these people. Like, I don't want to go home and when I'm trying to decompress, just be reminded of how shitty the fucking dating pool is. But for some reason, when I watch Love Island UK, I'm like, we're in different dating pools, right? You're over there. You're all, this is different. You know, I don't want to watch U.S. dating shows. That's my backyard. Those are who I play with. I don't want to see them. They are fucking weird and crazy. I want to watch somebody else's weird and crazy. Love Island UK. Perfect. Perfect. And they're funnier. And it's just all around better. Vanderpump Rules. Similar thing going on here. Everyone's insane. I don't wish to know any of them. They all behave in ways that I truly have never witnessed other living people behave. Like, they found some of the most diabolical people to cast for this. And every season I've watched so far, I'm in the middle of season 4 right now. Every season I've watched so far, you think like, okay, there's no way somebody else can become the villain after this person. Like season 1, so clear that Jax is the main villain. Stassi's like a secondary villain, but Jax is the main one. And then you get to season 2 and you're like, holy fuck. Jax is not the only one capable of being a primary villain. All of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Tom Sandoval's a villain. All of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Kristen's also a villain. Oh, okay, well, James is also a villain. Stassi is also a villain. They're all fucking villains. And they just swap. They just swap it out. They pass off. And I am obsessed. I'm so fucking obsessed. I'm hooked. I have been talking about Vanderpump on Instagram. Because I just like need a place to talk about these things. Nobody cares unless you've seen it. And then you're like having the time of your life watching me do this. And if you haven't watched Vanderpump, I think I'm doing great PR for them right now. So if you're interested in a new reality show that is 11 seasons long and done, that you can just binge in its entirety, Vanderpump, baby. Vanderpump. It's so good. But I've been ranking the cast members at the end of every season in order from, you know, my favorite to my least favorite. And so far, I've only watched season 1, 2, and 3 in their entirety. So I'm just saying, that's where we stand as I'm saying this sentence right now. This is always subject to change. But as we have currently stood, I have ranked Sheena in my top position for every single season. I understand that this is controversial from what I've heard. I don't yet know why it is, because in the first 3 seasons, at least, Sheena is very obviously the most likable of that entire cast. She is bullied relentlessly. Season 1, Stassi, Katie, Kristen, they are so fucking mean to her that by the end of season 1, I was like, that girl could do fucking anything to those girls in return and I would back her on it, because they have treated her like dirt on the bottom of their shoe. All right. If she wants to retaliate and fight back in some way, I support it. So anytime she did or said questionable things, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Team Sheen, Team Sheener over here, okay? She can get in there and say whatever the fuck she wants. Stassi, though, season 1, cartoonishly mean. Cartoonishly fucking mean. That little thing that happened with Jax and Lacey May, whatever the fuck her name is. The cutie that Jax was seeing. She has a double name and she has a high-pitched voice. Her, whatever Stassi said to her via text and on the phone that she got called out for and openly admitted to was like some of the meanest shit I've ever heard come from the mouth of a human being ever. And she owned it completely. So at some point, so I started being like, Stassi is off the walls. I like, she's so mean and just like a terrible person. But the way that she owns it and just accepts it, there's no part of her that pretends she's a better person than she actually is. She's like, yeah, I did say that with my whole chest and I would do it again. Like, it's so cartoonish that she starts to turn a corner for me and I start to like her again. So season 2 and season 3, I did start to like Stassi more. She's not in season 4, which is a major loss. She does come back, though. I have heard this. I love how I'm talking about a TV show that aired literally so many years ago, like a decade ago. Anyways, but just looking at the cast for all the early seasons, Sheena is by far the most likable of them. Here's the one thing that she's been doing, though, that is grating on me. And it's bothered me. She's done it a little bit every season, but it's starting to get significantly worse. And it is that Sheena has at multiple points self-described herself as a guy's girl.
Oh, God, why would you say that?
Like, even saying it out loud in the comforts of my own home, it sends a shiver down my spine. Anyone who calls themselves a guy's girl deserves to be monitored by the government. Like, I don't trust you. If given the choice between being a guy's girl or a girl's girl, if we're going to be real binary about this shit, if you had to pick one, which would it be? And if you say guy's girl, I think that you should be executed on the spot because there's something wrong. I think it is fucked up when people call themselves guy's girls. When a woman with her whole chest is like, I'm a guy's girl, we all gasped. Every woman around the world gasped in unison. And we said, I'm going to pray for you tonight. Baby, I'm going to close my eyes and I'm going to try to telepathically send to you all the reasons why you should never say a thing like that. Oh my God, it's so painful. And I have empathy for it because the girls have been so mean to her that I understand how she could get pushed towards hanging out with the men of Vanderpump who are arguably way worse than any of the women could ever be. The narcissism that runs, that pulses through Jax's veins, is crazy. He does enough for all of them. And even though he does enough for all of them, Tom Sandoval and James Kennedy are just as bad in their own right. And you know what? Schwartz is getting up there too for me. I understand how Sheena could endure those women and be like, you know what? Fuck that. Fuck all these girls who are bullying the fuck out of me. I'm a guy's girl. So bad, though. But it's like, you'd think that she would have other women in her life that don't behave like Stassi. Like, I've never met a single woman who behaves like Stassi. Not one. Not fucking one. But fine. Let me assume that Sheena has never had another interaction with a woman other than Stassi, Katie, and Kristen. That's crazy. But if those were her three interactions with women, I understand how Sheena could be like, I'm a guy's girl. I'm not about all that girly shit, whatever. But like, she keeps doing it more and more. She keeps making it a bigger part of her personality. And I keep, every time I see it, being like, baby, Sheena, I love you, girl. You're number one on my list still. Listen, you are the most tolerable of all of them so far. The biggest crime you've committed is being a little cringe. That's fine with me. But the more you say that you're a guy's girl, the more you own that title and place it upon yourself willingly and not as an insult, the more you do that, the more likely you are to lose me. In the most recent episode that I watched, there was like, some drama happening with Kristen and James and Lala, and James cheated on Kristen and lied to Lala, so she was like sort of unknowingly involved in the cheating. Anyways, they were out at some bar or club and Sheena was sort of mediating this drama, and she said something like, and you know I'm being serious because like I'm not even a feminist. And I was like, girl, sister, you're not a what? Like, I have to just be like, these people are too stupid to know what they're saying. And that's fine. And that's fine. But Sheener, baby, Sheener, you're going to lose me. You're going to lose me with this. I can't stick around. I can only defend so much. I can only stick up for so much. You're still the best out of all of them. This is still the least offensive offense of everything everyone in that cast has done so far. But we have to, you know, keep our wits about us here. We can't be calling ourselves a guy's girl. And Lala just came in and called herself a girl's girl. So I'm like, Lala could really shake things up here. Why do I feel like Sheena and Lala are not going to get along? And also, now that Stassi's out, Sheena's like becoming the mean girl, which is also going to make me stop liking her. Because I can feel bad for you when you are the bullied. But if you become the bully, all bets are off. Suddenly I'm rooting for whoever it is that you have been bullying. Listen, I get it. People go on reality TV shows and they get a little too cocky, a little too self-involved after the first few seasons. Maybe the fans like them. They're feeling good. They start to go a little off the rails. And that's that for them. And we saw that happen on The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives season 2 with Demi, who absolutely did that. At the end of the day, my favorite on Secret Lives of Mormon Wives is always going to be Taylor. No shot, no contest. It's always Taylor. I don't care what that girl does. She is the most entertaining of all of them by far. By far. Without Taylor, there would be no fucking show. And don't you forget it. And also, can I just say, I personally appreciate Taylor for her and all of her flaws because she is a woman of conviction. She will say what the fuck is on her mind. She is not a Switzerland type bitch, which I appreciate. I can't stand an opinionless type fucking person. I can't stand a middle of the road type bitch. I can't. It bothers me. It bothers me. If you can just stay in the middle, if you can remain Switzerland, remain neutral within specific topics of conversation. But for me, everything, but my judgment of other people is for specific situations. But like when I look at other people that are able to just like sort of stay neutral, stay Switzerland, I'm like, what happened? What happened in life that you just don't have an opinion? And the reason I say this is because there were so many situations this season on Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, so many like conflicts where they're screaming, fighting, disrespecting the hell out of each other, and nobody was standing up for anybody else. I was like, hello, any of you bitches gonna say something? Couldn't be me. Couldn't be me. To be friends with a bunch of people who won't stand up for you where you're being absolutely fucking berated by another person. That's crazy. Also, not to call out Miss Layla, but when she and Taylor were on the flight going back from whatever photo shoot they did, and Layla was like, yeah, they made a separate group chat and they're talking shit about you in it, and she showed Taylor the texts that Layla is like fully taking part in. Like, Layla is in that group chat also shitting on Taylor. Like, if I was Taylor, I wouldn't have let that part go. I wouldn't have been like, oh, you're good because you were honest with me. Like, you fessed up about it. I would have been like, okay, freak. Like, you were talking shit about me too. It's like that whole thing of, you know, why does someone feel comfortable talking shit about me to you as my friend? Like, there's no world where someone would come to me to shit talk Ashley, because there's not even one singular world where I wouldn't tell Ashley and I wouldn't immediately stand up for her in the moment. Like, I find it highly suspicious when somebody is going to include you in the shit talking and you're allegedly my friend. Like, why do they feel comfortable shit talking me to you? Why were you involved in this group chat? Why did they feel comfortable adding you to it? And I get maybe it's different with like the friend group dynamic of it all, but still, I thought it was weird. I was like, okay, good for Layla for like telling Taylor, but not good enough, because she was involved in it too. And then when push came to shove and the fight started happening in front of everyone's faces, and Layla was like, yeah, I'm going to stand up for you. I'll be on your side. And then she said nothing. It was crickets. I'm like, that is the most annoying thing to me. That is the most annoying thing to me. How are you just going to stay silent when your friend is being berated? And then at the end of it all, it seemed like they all took Taylor's side and Demi stormed out. So it's like, okay, so you were on Taylor's side. You just were going to let her get into those arguments all on her own and not stand up for her and let Demi believe that she was totally in the right for all of that. Like, okay, fine. Protect your own peace. Fine. And also, what happened to riding for the besties? What happened to it? I feel like, yes, protect our peace. And also, sometimes you gotta be a bitch. Sometimes being a bitch is necessary. And that's how I felt watching Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. I also just feel like maybe it's mimicking the current path of my own life where I'm like, you know what? The peace has been protected, baby. The peace has been protected for so long. And now I just don't, I'm not in the business of being disrespected anymore. So if you come crazy, I'm going to come crazier because I'm done with that. I'm done with all that. All right. So your hate comments are no longer safe anymore. I might let loose in those comment sections every now and again. Listen up. I can get crazy with it. I can get crazy with it every now and then because I know you're not talking to me. I know it wasn't me you thought you were talking to. Right. That's what I thought. Sometimes you got to be a bitch. Sometimes you just got to fight a little bit when someone's being disrespectful. That's fine. And also stand up for your friends. And they say that reality TV is substanceless. They say that you can't learn things by watching reality TV. Oh, how little they know. Oh, how little they know. The glories, the absolute joys of reality TV. Fuck. Okay. So I'm very into Bravo right now, in conclusion. And I've been posting all of my Vanderpump reflections over on Instagram. And I put it in a saved highlight in case you care. I've been seeing the propaganda I'm not falling for videos all over Instagram and TikTok recently, and I have my own list of propaganda I'm not falling for that I am interested in unpacking. But before I do, there is an important subject that I'd like to bring up on the pod, particularly for those of you who live in New York City. We have an upcoming mayoral primary election coming up in less than a month, all right? I believe early voting starts on June 14th, and the election itself is on June 24th. Our current mayor is a piece of shit. We all know this. Right now, Andrew Cuomo is leading the race in terms of who our next mayor will be. Andrew Cuomo is also a piece of shit. These are two people, Eric Adams and Andrew Cuomo, that do not give a fuck about the average, everyday New Yorker. They do not care about making this city more affordable and accessible to the people who make New York what it is. They care about making New York a nice, cushy place for all of their rich buddies. Andrew Cuomo failed the people of New York as governor multiple times over. Not to mention, this is a man with several sexual misconduct allegations. This is not the type of person that we want running New York City. So let me tell you about a candidate that I do think could be great in the position of mayor here in New York City, and that person is Zohran Mamdani. Zohran is running for mayor of New York City to help lower the cost of living in New York. He wants to make buses fast and free. He wants to implement free childcare options. He wants to implement a rent freeze and so much more, all with the unified goal of making New York a more affordable city to live in and one that really cares about the average everyday New Yorker, not the top 1% of people in this city. I really like Zohran. I felt really inspired by his campaign. I've spoken to so many people about Zohran. I've actually been pleasantly surprised at how active people have been, at least in my community, in talking and canvassing for Zohran. I've had multiple people knock on my door to talk about Zohran with me, and I get so excited every time people have shown up and I've been like, oh yeah, dude, I'm so excited. I'm really excited about his campaign too. I'm planning on ranking Zohran in my number one spot, and no, I will not be ranking Cuomo. New York does a ranked choice voting. So the number one thing to remember here is we do not want to rank Andrew Cuomo at all. Leave that man off your ballot. He's a piece of shit and he would be terrible for New York. What we do want to do is rank Zohran in our number one spot and rank literally anybody else below him. We want to rank Zohran number one, and we still want to rank other options below Zohran just not Andrew Cuomo. Under no circumstances should we be ranking Andrew Cuomo. But I felt really excited and energized by Zohran's campaign. I volunteered to phone bank for the campaign this past Monday, and it was very anxiety-inducing and also so much fun. I famously don't love doing phone calls like that, but it felt really important to me because this primary election feels really important to me, and the mayor of New York is a really big, important role. And in order to make this city more livable and enjoyable and accessible to the people who live here and make this city what it is, we need to give a fuck about who it is that we are electing into the mayoral position. So I know there are many people who listen to this podcast who live in New York City. Some of you may have been born and raised in New York. Some of you may have moved to New York. I'm especially talking to the transplants when I say this. Please, please get involved in this election. Educate yourself about who is on the ballot and what is at stake here. We need you to be engaged with your community and with the city as a whole. Please make a plan to vote in the mayoral election next month. I'm going to be early voting because I will be in Greece during actual election day. It's really important that you vote in this election, and even more important that we do not vote for Andrew Cuomo in this election. So I'm going to leave all the information about Zohran and his campaign down below. I really encourage you to go check him out and learn more about the policies that he's running on. And if you feel as inspired about his campaign as I do, I really encourage you to go get out there, volunteer, canvas, phone bank, whatever it is that you can do. Phone banking, although was anxiety inducing because I don't love making phone calls, it was so awesome when I did get a caller that was genuinely curious. There was one young man who I talked to who I felt particularly struck by because he was asking such great questions, and I was so excited that I could answer them for him. I was so excited that he was genuinely curious, and at the end of the phone call, he was expressing interest in volunteering for Zohran as well. And that to me feels like moving the needle. Getting to talk to people who are curious and want to learn more and are genuinely interested in getting engaged in their community and helping them do that, helping them be more involved. That feels like progress to me. And it feels good to be involved in it firsthand. So I highly, highly, highly recommend volunteering in some way if you can. We need all the help we can get. We're still trying to really get the word about Zohran out there. Obviously, Andrew Cuomo is leading the polls, but Zohran is not far behind him. There is a world where Zohran could be our next mayor, and we need to fight like hell in the next month to make that a viable possibility. So please, with everything in me, if you live in New York City, if you vote in New York City, please, please check out Zohran Mamdani and educate yourself about the campaign he's running on and why we should not be voting Andrew Cuomo into office as our fucking mayor. Please, God, don't do that. So anyways, small rant over. All of the links for educational resources for that are going to be linked in the description of this podcast episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. New Yorkers, especially transplants, please get out and vote in the upcoming mayoral primaries. Thank you. Okay, propaganda I'm not falling for. I've been adding to this list over the course of the last week as more things have come to my brain. And I'm sure I'm going to keep adding to it because it's honestly, I don't have that many here so far. So this is just going to be like a running note on my phone. And as I have more, I'll update you guys. Listen, I'll keep you in the loop. More propaganda I've decided I'm not falling for. So here's my premiere list, though. The start of something new. Okay. Number one piece of propaganda I'm not falling for is, of course, the normalization of AI. This is actually all I talk about in therapy these days. I get on my call and I'm like, hey, I'm having a panic attack about AI and how cool everyone seems to fucking be with it. And I talk and talk and talk, and talking actually doesn't make me feel better. Talk therapy, not helping with my anger about AI. I just feel like at a loss about it. I feel deep panic and sadness about it, and a very deep rage about it really over everything else. I'm finding it hard to have measured reactions when people casually bring up using AI. I definitely got a little spicy with my parents who visited me this past weekend because my mom was like asking ChatGPT to look at moles and tell her if they were fucking cancerous. I'm like, first of all, let's not do that. Let's not do that. Okay. Miss Anne Michelle with her doctorate in WebMD. Let's not do that. ChatGPT does not fucking know. Go to the doctor. Hey, go to the fucking doctor if you're concerned about a mole. It just is. I feel like a lot of my rage around AI is centered on people using it for creative purposes, but it's also sending me down a spiral for people who just use it as a fucking search engine too. I think it is unbelievably bad that we're letting AI become this integrated into our day-to-day lives. But I feel more anger and rage towards the use of AI for anything creative. When people use it to spit out video ideas, podcast topics, essay topics, poetry prompts, whatever it is, to use it for some kind of creative output, whether it's giving you an entire outline or just like an initial idea to jump off of, I don't care. I think it's bad. I think that AI is making people uncomfortable with sitting in the unknown, and that is bad. It is so bad for creativity. Here's the thing. We need periods of creative lulls in order to have the creative highs. We need periods in life where we are uninspired. We need that. You might be uncomfortable with it, but we need it. It is so much better if you don't have an idea, if you don't know what to talk about this week on your podcast, if you don't know what kind of video you want to make, what kind of TikTok you want to make, I don't care what it is. You don't know what you want to make, but you just know deep inside you that you have an urge to create. That's good. You have the urge to create. Awesome. Good thing. The reaction to that urge and that unknown of how you want to channel that energy is not to ask ChatGPT for the answer. Like, it actually makes me feel so hopeless to try to explain it. Like, I feel panicked about that. I don't know if you can tell in my voice, but when people say things like that, it actually like ignites a panic in me because I'm like, you are so close to losing the plot entirely and you don't even know it. You are so close to losing access to the creative part of you and you are like, you know, la-di-da about it. It is sending me to Mars. You need to let yourself be uninspired. You need to let yourself be uninspired and go out and live your life and let life inspire you. It's okay that you don't know what you want to make a video about, that you don't know what to talk about in your podcast this week, that you don't have an idea for what the next poem you want to write should be about. That is okay. You have to go out and let life inspire you. Let the unknown inspire you. Think of it as a blank slate. Don't you want to fill in the gaps yourself? Why would you let AI tell you how to fill in those gaps? Does that not make you feel like you're giving up a part of your creative self? Because it would make me feel like I was giving up a part of my creative self. And don't you feel protective of your creative self? Don't you want to preserve that part of you? Why the fuck would we let AI decide for us all of these things? I just think that it's like this culture of convenience that is stripping us of the very conflict and uncomfortable pits that make us so creative, that make life so great. It's like we're sterilizing ourselves, and it is terrifying. It is terrifying to me how comfortable people are with sterilizing this part of themselves in pursuit of convenience and easy answers. I think it's bad. I don't give a fuck that ChatGPT can come up with it quicker than I can. I care more about my own soul and heart and being creative and infusing that into everything I do. I care more about the process of letting myself experience my creativity myself rather than just being fucking efficient with it. I will be slow for the rest of my fucking life and take my time with shit over letting AI do it for me in the name of being fast. Fuck that. Fuck that. And honestly, most of the time, I think that the answers that ChatGPT comes up with are not as good as the ones that you could come up with yourself. I don't think the ideas are as good, the concepts are as good. I'm never going to believe that, okay? I believe that creativity is a human thing that AI can't replicate. But even if in some stretch in time, a couple months from now, a year from now, AI does start spitting out ideas that maybe I would deem as being good, and I would think that those are good creative outputs, even if it did start doing my job better than me, I still wouldn't fucking use it. I still wouldn't fucking use it because I care about me. I care about my experience on this fucking planet being a creative person. I care about my creative integrity. It would, like, just to me, it feels like you're just throwing it all in the trash. You're throwing your own potential in the trash when you deny yourself the opportunity to sit in the discomfort of not having a fucking idea and just going to ChatGPT to solve that for you. It brings me into a panic. It brings me into a fucking panic. And it really bothers me how normalized it's becoming and how integrated into our world it's becoming. I'm stressed out that there are, you know, clips of AI newscasters going around on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook, and if they're just getting better and better and harder to spot. And yeah, young people can usually spot them now, but old people fucking can't. And maybe there will be a day where we can't tell the fucking difference either. What's true and what isn't true when so much of it is just being fabricated and made up, and there are literally no regulations around it. I can't even talk about it more because it's pissing me off, but for every TikTok or Instagram video that I see where someone's like, if you're not using ChatGPT, you're falling behind, I want to stab myself in the eye with a fork. I do. I think that would be better than watching videos like that. It is so soulless to me to choose convenience and speed, efficiency, over the very thing that makes you human is so fucking twisted and brainwashed to me. Like, I actually feel bad. I actually feel bad. And I'm scared. I am genuinely scared. So, yeah, shit that I'm not falling for, the normalization of AI. Specifically in creative settings, but kind of overall as well. And to be honest, my opinion on AI changes more and more as time goes on, because I used to feel fine about AI being used in a utility sense to fix things and, you know, tweak things, to touch up. Like, for example, I've used the generative AI feature in Photoshop when I had a vertical image that I wanted to make horizontal for a video thumbnail. I took the photo. The photo was all creatively done already. I just didn't take it in the right format. So I wanted to switch it from vertical to horizontal. Generative AI in Photoshop could help me do that. I used to feel like it was fine in a utility sense, and I'm starting to not feel like that anymore. Now I'm starting to feel like it's just all bad because there's like no stop to it. There's no end. And I think the more out of control it feels, the more I just become anti all of it. So yeah, I think eventually I'm just going to end up in a place where I think there's no room for AI in the conversation. Because I think there needs to be regulation around it effective fucking immediately. And I think that a lot of people need to look inwards and ask themselves why it is that they feel more inclined to lean on a robot than lean on themselves. But that's just me, I guess. Sorry. Got a little crazy there for a second. Next thing on my list, chin lipo. Fucking easy. Chin lipo has been on my list for fucking ever. Famously, I block anyone who gets chin lipo because I don't want to see that. I will never fall for it. And that's that on that. You can't convince me that having a soft neck and a double chin and a soft jawline isn't the most cutie pie thing ever. And fuck you for trying to take that away from me, okay? Chin lipo, down. Down with chin lipo. Really, you could put many cosmetic procedures on this list, but chin lipo just feels like the one that is the most prevalent, top of my mind. Not fucking falling for it. Not falling for it. You can't convince me that this shit isn't fucking glorious and exactly what bitches would have been scrambling to paint back in the Renaissance era, okay? You couldn't convince me of that. This next one is going to come as no surprise to anyone, but playing it cool as a method of dating, not falling for it. Not falling for it, never falling for it. Playing it cool has to be the worst method of dating. Playing it cool for why? For why, for what, for who? Denying yourself the ability to step into 100% of you in the name of someone else thinking you're fucking cool, but really they're not even thinking that you're cool. They're thinking this characterization, this, you know, Oscar award winning performance of you is cool. And I think in the end, it just makes you feel worse about yourself, because if people only love you, if you convince yourself that people only love you when you're playing this characterized version of yourself, yeah, you're going to end up in a not so good place. Eventually, you're going to just fucking hate yourself. So don't play it cool. No playing it cool. Show up as 100% yourself. And if you're too weird, if you're too crazy, if you're too out there, if you're too loud, you're too emotional, you're too sensitive, you're too whatever, I don't care what it is. If you're too much of anything, good. Good, because they weren't enough for you, and now you know. I don't think anyone should play it cool. Ever. Ever. Okay? Sorry. I know this is the propaganda that I'm doling out as the least mysterious woman you've ever encountered. Okay? Stop playing it cool. You're not cool. I just think that you're performing. This is a performance, and good for you. You should really look into acting, but that's not you. And I would like to know you. Playing it cool, not sexy. It's totally out. Famously, I've been saying this. Everyone knows that. Literally, everyone's been talking about it. Nobody can shut up about it. It's not cool. It's not sexy. Nobody likes it. Okay, next one. And this one actually fires me up. Cats not being as affectionate as dogs. Wrong. Lie. Propaganda. Absolute made up lies by big dog. By big canine trying to get in here and just slanderize my precious baby little cats. Okay. I'm actually so sick of this. The idea that cats are not as affectionate or loving as dogs. And I say this as someone who is the owner of the sweetest, most affectionate cat in the world, and someone who fosters a lot of cats that are not affectionate when they first come in here. A lot of the cats that I have fostered come in here and they are scared and they are hissing at me and they are deeply distrusting of humans. Now, here's the thing. If you don't help to socialize cats like that, it's possible that they will hate humans forever. And it will be of no fault of their own, okay? Because it's a self-protection thing. That is what they've learned. And if they don't have someone to help socialize them and help them learn to trust and slowly work with them one by one to build that, then yeah, they probably will be hissy and distrusting of humans forever. But that's not their fucking fault. It's yours, you fucko, because you didn't look into how to properly socialize them or how to actually care for cats. You just adopted an animal because you thought it was really cute and didn't look into any of the background of how to actually care for that animal. Fuck you. Cats are just as affectionate as dogs. I just think that they are oftentimes more neglected than dogs are. I think oftentimes people just adopt cats because they think they are these hyper independent creatures that don't need a lot of your time and energy. They adopt these cats, particularly when they're young, because they're just so small and cute. They neglect the fuck out of them because they say that they're just so independent and they don't really need a lot. And then the cat naturally just doesn't fucking like you. And doesn't trust other humans as a result. So, you know what? And that's not to say that there aren't some cats that can be assholes. Cats have a range of personalities. The same way dogs do, right? But dogs don't have a reputation for being unaffectionate the way that fucking cats do. And that's not the fault of the cats. It's the fault of the fuck-ass owners. I'm just saying. It's not the cat's fault. It's never the cat's fucking fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's not the cats. It actually pisses me off that anybody could, like, not give Mango her flowers. She loves me so well. She loves me better than half the fucking people I've known in this lifetime. That cat has a heart 30 times the size of her goddamn body, okay? She loves me so much, and I love her so much. And I feel anger at the idea that anyone thinks that, like, the capacity that this little angel has for love is somehow not up to snuff. That makes me angry. And also, it makes me mad on behalf of the fosters too, because I have seen in all of the fosters that have come to me, they come so scared and distrusting of people and, you know, hissy and all of these things. And then they leave sweethearts. Little by little, we get them to warm up and open up, and it's beautiful and it's hard work, and they are so teeny tiny and brave to trust big old scary me towering feet above them. Like, the fact that they have the capacity to warm up to humans after having a rough beginning, after being so scared and not understanding what's going on, like, it is a beautiful and wonderful thing. And literally, fuck anyone who doesn't put in the effort to let these cats blossom and come out of their shells and be properly socialized, because they're convinced that cats are so independent and just don't fucking need a lot. That's wrong. They do. And they're just as affectionate as dogs are. Perhaps it's an owner problem. That's my theory, at least. This next one may be controversial, I don't really know, but coconut water. That shit tastes like ass. Who's lying about this? Who is lying to who, and why are you telling me that coconut water tastes good? It does not. It does not. Coconut water? Cheeks. It tastes like I threw up in my mouth. I can't swallow it. It's so bad. Stop lying. Coconut water tastes bad. Okay, next up, propaganda I'm not falling for. Preventative Botox. What the fuck are we preventing? Riddle me this. What are we preventing? The possibility of a wrinkle, of aging, of the very normal, very expected thing where you don't look the same as you did when you were 22, when you're 57. Yes, actually, I have no desire to look 22 when I'm 57. I hope when I'm 57, I look, you guessed it, 57. I don't need to run away from my future self. I actually welcome her with open arms. I think that she's going to be beautiful. I think that age will look beautiful on her. I am not preventing anything. I'm not preemptively getting rid of a version of myself that doesn't even exist yet. How do you know that you won't love yourself with wrinkles? How do you know that you wouldn't love yourself as a 57-year-old? You're not even going to give yourself the chance to figure it out. You're just going to prevent all of it from ever happening. You might feel the sexiest you've ever felt in your 40s, in your 50s, in your 60s. Who's to fucking say? You're just never going to give yourself the opportunity to know that? Preventative? Yeah, just don't get it. What are we preventing? And explain it without sounding like an asshole. Ah, I got you there. I got you there, didn't I? Okay, next one, also deeply controversial to some and totally not controversial to me. This is, like, you know, written into the rule book when you enter my virtual space, which is that hot workout classes are fucking bad. Propaganda I'm not falling for, hot workout classes. Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to work out and torture myself in the process? Like, I'm all about joyful movement and finding movement that feels fun to you. I'm not convinced that anyone who does hot workout classes is having fun. I'm convinced you guys are just masochists. Like, I don't know. I don't understand how we can be having fun while I feel like, you know, my heart is beating so fast, my whole fucking chest is about to cave in. I don't understand how that's fun. Imagine this. You do yoga, except you feel like you're going to die the whole time. Imagine this. You take a dance class, except the room is so hot you feel like you're inhaling water every time you take a breath. Like, there's just no way that you guys are going to convince me that shit is fun. I like to have fun and feel joy when I move my body, not fear. Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't actually want to be afraid in my workout class, but appreciate the offer. I will be keeping the room at a very normal, if not cold, temperature, ideally. Okay, next up, frequent hair washing being bad for your hair. I'm not falling for it. And this is coming from someone who had to significantly scale back the amount I was washing my hair because I dyed my hair purple. But know this, if my hair wasn't dyed a fantasy color, I would still be washing the shit every fucking day. I wash my hair every single day from the time I was 11 to the time I was, 25? When did I dye my hair? 3 years ago? Every day. Every day I woke up, the first thing I did was get in the shower and wash my hair, and it was incredible. It was glorious. I loved every second of it, and I would be doing it now if my hair wouldn't, you know, wash out entirely twice as fast. Even still, even with my purple hair, like, some people love stretching it. I wash my hair every 2 days, sometimes three, but on the third day, it's a slick back. But it's like every other day I'm washing my hair because I just fucking can't. I'm over this idea of like constant hair washing being bad for your hair. And I actually feel uniquely qualified to say that I think it's bullshit because I've been surrounded by hairstylists my whole life. My mom is a hairdresser. And I always used to ask her and she was like, not really. Do whatever you want. And I was like, period, queen. And then I've asked other hairstylists over the years too. And they've been like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. Unless you have color, then it matters. Not because it's hurting your hair necessarily, but because it's just going to wash out quicker, which you don't want because you're paying all this money to get it done. So if you don't dye your hair, I think that you should wash it however much you want to wash it. Why are we trying to stretch ourselves to shower less? It's just not for me. I think you should wash your hair as much as you want to wash your hair. And even with me trying to shower every other day, if I wake up and my hair just like feels greasy and gross and I'm like, ugh, I need to take a shower. I don't care if I showered yesterday. I will shower again. I will wash my hair fucking again. I mean, obviously I'm doing a body shower every day. I'm not a maniac. Okay. It is hot and sweaty in New York. Yeah. You better believe I'm in that shower at least once a day, sometimes two. But like in the summer, if my hair gets all sweaty and gross and I washed it that morning, but that night I'm like, oh God. And then I wake up the next morning. Yeah, fucking I will shower again. Sue me. Okay. I have one life and I want to enjoy my life. I enjoy my time in this body and I do not enjoy having greasy and gross hair. It needs to look gorgina all the time. So yeah, not falling for the idea that I can't do that. I've never had a problem with it. So suck it, you guys. And the last one I have on this list is invoices with anything beyond net 30. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I fucking mean that. And honestly, even I'm being reasonable when I say net 30, like, fine, I'll give you a little bit of time to, you know, send my invoice to the proper people and get it processed. But when people do net 60, net 90, net, and don't gasp when I tell you this, but 120, do you think I work for free? People who want to do net 60, net 99, net 120, like, I want to charge you extra for making me wait for that shit. I have bills to pay. What do you mean? I mean, really, I think we should be rocking with net 14, right? Because with everybody else's job, everyone else gets paid biweekly for the most part. You're walking home with money being put in your account at least every 2 weeks. But when you're self-employed, it's like, well, I might have three invoices come in on May 1st. And then for all I fucking know, the next time I get paid might be May 29th. And there's just nothing that comes in between that. Like, it's unfucking predictable. And sometimes that's even kind of close. Sometimes it can be even longer than that. Sometimes you have like a bunch of invoices come in at the top of the month and then you literally don't have anything until the end of the following month. Like, it is not fun. And it's just because all of the payment schedules are totally fucking random, brand to brand, company to company that you work with. Like, everything changes. And I think it's fucked up. I think in an ideal world, net 14 should be the maximum. Net 30 is even pushing it, but I'm going to settle and say that anything beyond net 30 is crazy, because we've got to start somewhere. But just know that once I get all of you on board with anything beyond net 30 being crazy, I'm up in it to 14. Anything beyond net 14 is actually crazy, if we want to be real about it. Because why the fuck do self-employed people have to wait several months to be paid for the work they do? No, where would anybody else get away with that in any other fucking context? Yeah, I worked. I did work for you. And now I'm going to have to wait 4 months to be paid. Okay? Don't talk to me about it. I still have pending invoices from fucking January. So, just saying, that shit is cuckoo bananas bonks, and you will never hear me defending that. I need my money. Give me my money. Anyways, that's all I've got for now, but I'm going to keep adding to that because I think that there is so much more for us to uncover here, but I have to go because I am actually going to a movie premiere, The Phoenician Scheme, Wes Anderson's new movie, so I have to get some nails on my nails, iron my dress, and get my ass in an Uber and on the way over to the premieres in the next 25 minutes. So I'm going to go. I love you guys so much. There is going to be an after show over on Patreon. Obviously, I'm not going to film that right now. I'll film it a little bit later. But we've got more culture to discuss and things to get into. So if you're dying for more of me, definitely go sign up for the Patreon, join the Lover Girls over on the Discord, and enjoy the after show. There's plenty of other content on the Patreon already for you to enjoy, plenty of other after shows for you to enjoy as well. And of course, you can follow me at Maddie Drosbeck on my other social media pages if you miss me when I'm gone. I love you guys so much. I will see you in next week's episode. Goodbye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.